another special Friday edition of Word of Mouth, including Anti-Psychiatry Radio. We're going to bring you later on a special on the Mother's Day anti-psychiatry, anti-shock protest at Queen's Park on May 7th, and a lot of speeches. But first, we're going to have the headlines with Susie and Shitala. Okay. Take it away, Susie and Shitala, for headlines. You're listening to CKLN FM.
And now for the headlines. European countries are reconsidering their open-door policies in the wake of refugees fleeing countries in North Africa. The Italian government has reported that its coast guards have rescued over 400 undocumented people trying to swim across the Mediterranean Sea. Many more people have drowned or have been washed away in their attempts to cross the Italian coast. In one particular instance, a vessel was left to drift for 16 days with its 72 passengers allegedly ignored in their cries for distress to NATO and European coastal nations. Laura Baldrini, a spokesperson for the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, has stated, quote, "The Mediterranean cannot become the Wild West. Those who do not rescue people at sea cannot remain unpunished," end quote. But European countries are beginning to make it more difficult for refugees seeking asylum. France has been the first nation to turn back a train carrying 1,000 French-speaking Tunisians. According to the Secretary General for the European Council on Refugees and Exiles, this year there has actually been a 20% decrease in the number of asylum seekers, and countries such as Europe and France are overreacting. The Secretary General stated that officials are, quote, officials see black people in boats landing on a small island in Italy, and it seems unmanageable, unquote, leaving unstated that these overreactions are based on knee-jerk xenophobia and racism.
Any more troubling news in Athens, violence continues against immigrants and particularly visible minorities. Several hundreds of people, including neo-Nazis, assaulted a Bangladeshi man, mistakenly reported as Pakistani in Athenian newspapers, after the murder of a 44-year-old man who was taking his pregnant wife to the hospital was blamed on someone who appeared to look, quote-unquote, foreign. The mob shouted, quote-unquote, foreigners, get out, attacking immigrants in the street and vandalizing at least one private shop owned by a merchant from a visible minority. The mob had hijacked public transportation, singling out and assaulting those who appear to be, quote-unquote, foreign.
Also in Greece, 4,000 to 5,000 people marched through the streets of Athens in a demonstration called in response to the violent attacks by police against participants in the general strike demonstration of May 11th. This march was also the target of police violence at the exact same point where a 30-year-old demonstrator was brutally assaulted by riot police. The demonstrator was gravely injured and is in an artificial coma. Solidarity marches and rallies against the repression of Athens' general strike were held in at least 15 cities across Greece last night.
In Pakistan, two bombs aimed at a paramilitary training center have killed at least 76 people, wounding at least 106 others, most of whom were military officials, but some of whom were civilians. Officials are citing the Pakistani Taliban as responsible for the bombs, calling it the, quote, first revenge, end quote, for the killing of Osama bin Laden, who was assassinated by U.S. forces in Abbottabad on May 2nd. Relief efforts in Pakistan have been unsuccessful and slow, with local hospitals ill-equipped to handle the high number of injured people.
And last week in Pakistan, intelligence officials reported on a U.S. missile attack close to the Afghan border, which killed at least 15 people. Media outlets have reported that another U.S. drone strike has also killed individuals in Yemen. In November 28th of 2010, a WikiLeaks alerted that the Yemeni government has been actively covering up U.S. drone strikes in the region. According to the documents released, the Yemeni government covered up a U.S. drone strike against Al-Qaeda and claimed the bombs were its own. The release points to a statement made by Yemeni President Ali Abdullah Saleh to General David Petraeus, then the commander of the U.S. forces of the Middle East. The conversation was reported in a diplomatic cable sent back to Washington by a U.S. diplomat in Yemen. Sheila Carapico, Richmond University visiting professor at the American University in Cairo, recently commented, quote, "In light of the coincidental confluence of events on May 1st, with Ali Abdullah Saleh nixing the GCC-brokered exit plans hours before bin Laden's execution, this was predictable. The Yemeni government has very strong incentives to demonstrate to the U.S. and Saudi Arabia their cooperation in counter-terror operations and to remind domestic opponents of the American military presence and thus to produce actionable intelligence or otherwise encourage a strike, end quote.
In national news this week, The Star reported that Premier Dalton McGuinty has called on Prime Minister Stephen Harper to make good on his promise of a national summit on Aboriginal issues. Harper had pledged during his 2006 campaign to hold a summit with Native leaders and First Ministers within 3 years of office. In April, Aboriginal Affairs ministers across Canada called on the federal government to fulfill its promise. Said McGuinty, quote, "There is a very strong consensus among Canadian premiers, Altern provinces, and three territories that we should be holding a summit devoted to our Aboriginal communities," end quote. National Aboriginal leaders have been asking the federal government to address a gap in education funding for First Nation communities. With some isolated Northern Ontario Reserve schools operating with no libraries, no computers, or science labs, some reserves have not even schools.
On Monday, The Star reported that seven First Nations teens who had left their remote communities to move alone to Thunder Bay for high school educations have gone missing since 2000. All of these teens were found dead. The latest one, grade 9 student Jordan Wabas, found this week. Wabas's family has demanded a more thorough investigation into their son's death and into the death of the six other teens. Like the six other teens, Wabas had gone to Thunder Bay for school. He had also gone for a chance to play hockey in an organized league and was a promising goalie. While police have reported no foul play, First Nations leaders have asked the federal government to address the series of deaths and to consider broader possibilities, alongside systemic issues around education that force teens to leave their reserves for education in the first place.
And the City of Toronto has launched a, quote, review of all of its services and implemented a multi-year financial planning process, end quote. After the 2012 budget gap of $774 million was released, the city has launched a website from which we're quoted with summaries and information on each service. Torontonians can enter feedback online and or attend or run discussions in their communities. There are also 8 city-run sessions, which will be held on May 24th, 26th, 28th, and 31st, and June 1st, 2nd, 4th, and 7th, which all have limited spaces. As Block TO editor and writer Derek Flack notes, involving the public in the reassessment of services is a good idea. However, it remains to be seen how much weight public feedback will be given. In other words, he asks, to what extent is this a PR stunt? Nonetheless, we encourage you to make your voices heard. If you think certain services are crucial to the city, make your opinion known. If you have access to online facilities, visit www.toronto.ca/Toronto Service Review, and that's it. If you can make it to the in-person events, you can register, and you should do so as soon as possible.
And public hearings for last year's G20 summit will begin next month in Toronto, June 1st at Metro Hall, June 6th at the Etobicoke Civic Centre, and June 13th at the Scarborough Civic Centre. The reviews are an attempt to discover how and why police officers carried out mass arrests, used rubber bullets, and kettled crowds of demonstrators and civilians. Members of the public who would like to present at the reviews will need to sign up online before May 25th. For more information, visit www.g20review.ca.
And for our last local headline, Scarborough residents are objecting to a Toronto Hydro project that will bury transformers under certain front yards at homes in the Warden Avenue and Kingston Road area. Residents who have complained that they have never been given proper notice of the transformers are skeptical about their safety. Toronto Hydro has suggested that this area of Scarborough has been prone to power failures, and these new transformers will alleviate this issue. On the matter of safety, Toronto Hydro explains on their website, quote, "You can arrange furniture and activity areas so that you do not expend a lot of time where EMFs, that is electromagnetic fields, are the highest." Places where EMFs are usually the highest include the electrical distribution lines, the main circuit box, and major energy-consuming appliances such as the fridge, stove, TV, and computers. Unquote. Residents want the project to be halted, fearing for their health, community well-being, and property values. However, Toronto Hydro states it will continue to move forward with the project.
And we've got some community announcements. The 5th annual June Callwood Lecture features speakers Kathy Crowe. Join Toronto street nurse Kathy Crowe on May 19th, 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Toronto Reference Library Atrium, 789 Yonge Street, for a street-level perspective on the need for social housing and why we need social programs now more than ever.
And as number of deaths among Toronto homeless is on the rise, memorial services have been held to honor these deaths. The next one will take place on June 14th. For more info, you can visit www.tdrc.net.
If you're looking for something worthwhile to do tomorrow, which is Saturday, join the Fair Vote Canada National Day of Action for Electoral Reform, May 14th, 2 p.m. at Queen's Park. The meeting location is to be announced, but for more information, visit www.facebook.com/FairVoteToronto. This is a nonpartisan event focusing on our voting system, which seeks to figure out why the government does not represent us. Wayne Smith, Fair Vote Canada, the executive director, will be one of the speakers.
And on May 15, 1948, David Ben-Gurion proclaimed the establishment of the State of Israel. This is the day for the Palestinian people, which is known as the Nakba. And every year since 1948, Palestinians commemorated it, hoping that they will return to their homelands one day. This year, on May 15th, the Arab world, as well as other countries, will participate in this year's Nakba rally to put an end to the Israeli crimes against Palestinians and condemning the illegal state of Israel. Join the Palestinian community on Sunday, May 15th at Bloor and University in front of the Israeli consulate at 1 p.m. to remember the victims of the Nakba and to demand justice and dignity for the Palestinian people.
And last but not least, a new group exhibition called Cyber Surveillance in Everyday Life opens tonight at the Inter-Access Electronic Media Art Center in conjunction with the new Transparency, Surveillance, and Social Sorting. Eight artists and designers have drawn inspirations from the constant monitoring, some of it intentional, some of it not, in our lives, primarily via online tools. The exhibit is on at Inter-Access Electronic Media Art Center, which is 9 Ossington Avenue, and it opens tonight, 7 p.m. It is free.
And that does us for tonight in terms of headlines. We're going to go to a quick music break, and then after that, there will be more Don White's and Anti-Psychiatry Radio. So don't click away from www.ckln.fm.
And we're back. And thank you, Susie and Shishitila, for the headlines. There's lots of gripping and often very sad news, but we'll bring it to you. You're listening to another special edition, Anti-Psychiatry Radio on CKLN. So welcome, friends. And the music you just heard was played by $100, and it was titled, and it's titled Forest of Tears. Forest of Tears, $100, the name of the band. They are playing tonight at the Great Hall at Queen and Davenport, 9 p.m., and there's a $12 admission. So let's get started right away, and on this special edition on our day before Mother's Day, May 7th, the Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault held, I think, its fourth protest against electroshock targeting women, particularly elderly women. Therefore, it was named, or the major theme was Stop Shocking Our Mothers and Grandmamothers. And there was a good turnout and lots of important speeches. There was a lot, and it was free food, free information at Queen's Park. And we thank many of you. We thank, if you were one of the people who showed up there at Queen's Park last Saturday, thank you very, very much for that support and interest. And I'll give you some information where you can get in touch with CAPA, the Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault, again, because the struggle against electroshock, which is a paradigm of fear, force, and fraud in psychiatry, the three Fs, is not going away, friends, and we have to continue to struggle against this, because psychiatry, whether it's electroshock or forced drugging or solitary confinement, is harming millions in North America and many millions around the world, and certainly in Toronto. It has harmed, electroshock has particularly harmed our sisters, so we are continuing to speak out. And this is not just a human rights issue, of course, it is a women's issue as well. So, Mark, who can we get started? Many thanks to Mark, who did the editing of the anti-shock protest on May 7th. The first one you'll hear will be an interview I had with MPP Sherry DeNovo, MPP for Parkdale High Park, the only politician, the only MPP in Canada who has had the courage to introduce a bill to defund, to stop funding electroshock in public hospitals in Ontario. Okay, first voice you'll hear will be, I guess, Sherry DeNovo and me. Okay, Mark? Welcome to another special Anti-Psychiatry Radio on CKLN 88.1 FM on your dial, friends. But today is special. As many of you know, I've been talking about electroshock and the need to ban it. And it is a direct assault on women, for sure, and on people's lives, a human rights violation. And we've been speaking out for many years at CKLN at Queen's Park. And here at Queen's Park today during the march and the Stop Shocking Our Mothers and Grandmothers, which is the theme of today's protest, I have Sherry DeNovo here. She is the NDP MPP from Parkdale High Park. Welcome to Anti-Psychiatry Radio Show.
Thank you, Don. Thank you.
Now, you introduced the bill, it was over a year ago, right?
Yes.
And to stop funding of electroshock, can you...
That's right, to delist electroshock.
To delist. Can you absolutely talk about that a bit more and why you decided
absolutely,
to
certainly. Well, I think one of the reasons I was elected is to represent or to give voice to what traditionally and historically have been voiceless communities at Queen's Park. And one of those voiceless communities have been consumer survivors. And certainly a consumer survivor movement is, through you, Don, and Bonnie and others, brought this to my attention. And quite frankly, I think that most Ontarians and most Canadians, for that matter, don't know that electroshock is still being performed broadly. They would be shocked, pardon the pun, themselves, to know that. And so this bill helped bring it to the attention of the general population. This practice is still going on. So that's number one. Number two, We have delisted all sorts of things we shouldn't have delisted from OHIP in the last 8 years, among them eye exams, chiropractic, etc. And the thought that we've delisted these essential services and kept on paying for something that I think would horrify folk is just unjust. And certainly I've also, and I, to be fair, received letters from people who say they've been helped by it. So that's why my bill says delisted, because there's lots of elective surgeries out there that people are willing to pay for that aren't necessarily good for their health. So we're saying, fine, if you feel it's good for you, pay for it. But don't expect that Ontarians and Canadians will pay for something that has been clearly shown to cause harm.
Well, first I want to congratulate you for doing this. I think you're the only member of Parliament, of any provincial parliament, of course we've given up on the feds, but to introduce a bill like this. Now, what do you expect the reaction will be, and what is the status right now of your bill being, whether it'll be discussed in committee or what?
Yes. Well, what's the reaction has been, I've received letters from groups of psychiatrists, as one would expect, who perform electroshock therapy and talk about how safe it is, yada yada. And I direct them to studies, as I'm sure you do, that show quite the opposite. But more to the point, I think this is, you know, what this bill reflects is a community's desire to see some change. And so again, as voice for the voiceless, that's what I'm doing. In terms of the status of the bill, all bills not passed, which is all bills from the opposition parties in Dalton McGuinty's Ontario, will die on the order table in about 3 weeks' time. Said that, yes, because the House rises in about 3 weeks. Now, we are facing an election October 6th, so I'm saying if this is an issue that's pertinent to you, please take it to your own candidates' meetings and talk about this. And then, you know, all fates being willing and I'm reelected, the bill will then be retabled. So right now it sits, but it and all other unpassed legislation will die on the order table. But I mean, as you know, Don, you've been at this for decades. The movement doesn't die, and the bill will be given another voice after we come back.
Right. Did you know that as we are speaking, there are similar protests on this day, on May 7th, happening in Ireland and in Montreal?
Oh, really?
Women's groups, because it's mainly women, as you know, and particularly elderly women who are the main targets of this diabolical procedure, which always causes brain damage. Now, you're familiar with some legislation in the States, although it's never been banned. Right. In the States, in fact, in Europe either. It's been restricted, but from what I understand, there's not even a restriction, except perhaps children, I'm not sure, under 16 in Ontario cannot get it. I'm not sure whether that's in the Family, Child and Family Services Act. But in the Mental Health Act, in the Consent to Treatment Act, there's no restriction, as far as I know, on electroshock. Is that your understanding?
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is my understanding. And again, as I say, I realize this is a controversial topic. It's been controversial since it was begun to be discussed. But you know, everything that becomes generally accepted at some point in history is controversial to begin with.
Right. I know you're going to speak it still, so we will end it. I want to say thank you very much.
Thank you, Don, for your activism for decades.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Barney Burstow.
Okay, there's speeches now at our protest. Stop shocking.
Latino educado, no un tecato, avato with vernacular. I am spectacular, immigrant natural. My crew is so dope, my traffic is international. Don't believe the news, it is not factual. My pistols and Mercedes, mistaken identity. False messiahs frosting fresh like that is the remedy. Revolution in the pedigree of every pedestrian. Illegal alien, but not an extraterrestrial. Wonderful life. Stay on task. In my sleep, I'm a dreamer. On my feet, make moves. La lucha continúa and everything that I do. Digo vivo al tanto de asalto por...
And we're back. This is your proud anti-psychiatry radio host on CKLN, Don White's. And you just heard Rebel Diaz sing Libertad, which I assume, of course, is liberty. And we certainly can use a lot more of that. We certainly, that speaks to the unjust deprivation of liberty in all psycho prisons and prisons in general. Okay, friends, so right now we're going to resume, thanks to technician Mark Brill, basically, who taped and edited the many speeches at CAPAs, that's the Coalition Against Psychiatric Assault's recent successful demonstration in Queen's Park against electroshock. And we're going to hear some speeches in right now. So, Mark, you can roll that tape back to May 7th.
Okay, speeches now at our protest. Stop shocking our mothers and grandmothers now. At Queen's Park.
We have all been trying to do something about for a long time, and we are going to do something about ECT, electroconvulsive therapy. I want to begin, before I say anything about ECT, by thanking a whole slew of people who have helped make today possible. I want to thank all the endorsers and the co-sponsors, and you know who you are. We demonstrate against ECT because it is an atrocity. We demonstrate specifically on or around Mother's Day because this is a deeply and profoundly sexist treatment. 2 to 3 times as many women as men are shocked, even though it has been proved conclusively that women incur more brain damage from shock than men do. Moreover, it is, despite the fact it has repeatedly been shown to be have no effectiveness beyond placebo, it is touted as the treatment of choice for postpartum depression. I know this as a researcher, I know this as a therapist who works in the area, I know this as a person who has witnessed many, many people profoundly damaged by this treatment. This demo stands in a tradition, a proud tradition, of other Mother's Day demonstrations against electroshock. It has been joined over the years by sister demonstrations against ECT on or near Mother's Day around the world, in Quebec, in Ireland, etc. We have been doing it year after year, and every year we begin it with a proclamation, which I will be reading now, which outlines our commitment and to end this treatment, to end it once and for all, and our understanding of it. So I'm going to read you what's called, you know, something I wrote a number of years back that we call the Anti-Electroshock Proclamation. We who care, we who are committed to decency, we who behold with horror the disrespect for human life around us, we who shatter at the knowledge of women whose memory has been turned into embers and ashes, of families brutally torn apart by pulse waves and sine waves, of the elderly whose final life reward is electrocution. We who hold this fearful knowledge can be silent no longer. Legislators, on this Mother's Day, we hold you directly accountable and call on you to withdraw your authorization for electroshock. Fellow citizens who think this practice stopped decades ago, on this Mother's Day, we tell you that the carnage continues and that you too are responsible. On this, the day before Mother's Day, May 7th, 2011, as survivors and allies, we come together to raise our voices in protest, and we vow to return, return, and return again until this abomination is no more. The next speaker will be our wonderful co-chair of this event, Simon Adam.
Thank you, Bonnie. Thank you, Grant. As a nurse, as an educator, and as a scientist, I stand here in opposition to ECT. I stand here after having seen the dreadful effects of ECT on people, my patients and my friends. I reject that ECT helps. I reject that ECT is not dangerous. I reject the misleading pro-ECT literature, and I reject the government's involvement and endorsement of this horrible treatment. Let us come together today as one voice and continue the work to kick ECT in the ass. I would like to introduce NDP MPP Sherry DeNovo to say a few words. Sherry.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Bonnie. And thank you for everyone here who has endured and comes out again year after year. I said it just recently to Don on his radio show. I'll say it again here. I was voted into Queen's Park, I believe, to give voice to the voiceless here. And in part, I'm doing that today. And I've done that with this bill. There are many who are not heard that should be heard in the halls of power behind me. And finally, we're giving that a voice. Now, in terms of my bill calling for the delisting of ECT, I've already heard from the psychiatric community. They've written me letters from various hospitals. I've heard from patients who say, quotes unquote, they've been helped by ECT. We know that the same things happened over lobotomies. We certainly know as women that the roots of gynecology itself were roots of abuse against women's bodies. We know that the time will come for this as well. You're just a little ahead of the curve. But if you keep coming back, we'll win. There's no doubt. The other thing I want to say, because it's Mother's Day, and I always start out when I talk to women by saying I'm the first woman born in my family as a human person. And people think, well, where was your mother or your grandmother born? I say they were Canadians. I was the first woman born who was not considered property of a man, either chattel for the father or the husband. And so I've seen that change in my lifetime. I also grew up with Help Wanted, male and female, in the Toronto Star. I grew up where there's only 10% allowed into medical school that were women, 10% into engineering. That was the era of the 60s and the 70s. That wasn't that long ago. We have come a long way. We have a long way to go as women, and part of that struggle is to retain our voice and our control over our own bodies. This is part of that struggle, control over our own bodies. We know now that there was some very good news on Monday night and some very bad news. The very good news was that great orange crush wave that happened. We have a real opposition in Ottawa now. The very bad news is that we have a Harper majority. So there may be some pushback about control over our own bodies as women. So we have to be ever vigilant. This is part of that struggle. It's a piece of the same struggle. It started with our bodies ourselves, if we all remember, the struggle to gain control, for birth control, for the right to choose, all of those rights. This is a feminist issue too. This is a woman's issue too. So happy Mother's Day, and I would just say keep up the activism, keep coming back, because it works. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sherry. At various times, there's a lot of people who have sent in shock survivors, mainly sent in pieces to be read. And at various times, we're going to have people come up and read them. Tara, could you begin us?
Thank you. I have the honor today of reading a statement by Dorothy Washburn Dundas, a shock survivor. I have been waiting 50 years to give this testimony before those of you who have the power to make a humane difference. When I was 19 years old, I became sad and lonely, and I tried to kill myself. I swallowed one half bottle of aspirin. My parents took me to the Massachusetts General Hospital, and thus began my three-year hellish odyssey as a prisoner of the mental health system. I was transferred to Baldpate Hospital, diagnosed with schizophrenia, and given 50 shock treatments against my will, 40 insulin comas, and 10 superimposed electric shocks. Very early on, the dark winter mornings of 1961, three other teenage girls and I were awakened, dressed in johnnies, and told to lie flat on our beds, which were lined up right next to each other. We were then injected with insulin, and on 10 of those mornings, a dark-suited man would walk through the door. He carried all of his equipment in a small black suitcase in one hand, this man of death and destruction. He set up his machine behind our heads, one by one. We were curled up beneath our sheets, as though seeking womb-like protection, when they peeled the sheets off of us, forcing us onto our backs, bare and open and vulnerable. I was second in the lineup. Before being turned, I would often peek out from a small secret opening in my sheet to see what they were doing to Susan, the first to receive the treatment. I would make myself watch as if it might prepare me in some way. And when she would shake violently all over, I could no longer watch. I would shiver beneath my sheet in fear. And then they would come to me. I can still feel the sticky, cold jelly they put on my temples. My arms and legs were held down. Just before he pushed the shock button, he would ask, "Is everybody ready?" Of course, he was not speaking to me. Petrified and stone silent. Each time, I expected I would die. I would wake up with a violent headache and nausea. My mind was blurred, and I permanently lost 8 months of my memory for events preceding the shock treatments. I also lost my self-esteem. I had been crushed as flat as a pancake. But I was very, very lucky. On one of those cold winter mornings, exactly 50 years ago, my friend Susan never woke up after the shock. She had just turned 17. When she died, she became a part of me. Thank you.
I'm going to be reading excerpts from a piece by a woman who prefers to remain anonymous, but it is her testimony about her receiving of electroshock. And I'm very honored, I must say, to be able to read this. I was just an ordinary middle-aged woman with ordinary problems of life. I was forced to have 25 sessions of bilateral electroconvulsive therapy. This, quote, therapy, unquote, was administered 3 times a week. It was like being sent to death row. I was terrified. I did not know whether I was going to die from lethal injection or from electrocution. After each, quote, therapy, unquote, I was totally confused. I had memory loss. I frequently had blood in my mouth. I had violent headaches. I had difficulty breathing. I developed a pronounced twitch in one foot. After each ECT session, my husband had to tell me where I was and why I was there and explain why I was being tortured. My husband was advised to find long-term institution for me. I was released from psychiatric custody. I was told I would require drugs for the rest of my life, and I would require weekly maintenance ECT also for the rest of my life. I tapered off the drugs when I learned from a pharmacist that my adverse response to drugs was mainly akathisia, a fairly common side effect of pharmaceuticals. The taper took several painful years. That was 6 years ago. I did not go back for maintenance ECT. I take no drugs. I am not in a long-term institution. Psychiatrists destroyed my mind, my physical health, my emotional health with pharmaceuticals and ECT. After ECT, I could not find my way home from hospital. I didn't know how to get to my apartment. After ECT, I lost almost 20 years of my life. I've not regained much. After ECT, I had severe headaches, but lost it almost nonstop for several years. I still have pains. After ECT, my eyes were full of fireworks, flashes, floaters, and clouds. After ECT, I had heart palpitations. After ECT, I discovered damage to my teeth and to my dental restorations. After ECT, my legs tremored nonstop. After ECT, I had spontaneous seizures. I still have them. After ECT, I had a pronounced twitch in my foot. After ECT, I had difficulty breathing. After ECT, I watched my husband collapse from grief, from stress, from guilt, and from heart failure. He had been informed that ECT was a safe and effective, and he had been coerced into giving approval. I am every woman. I am every man. What happened to me could happen to anyone. I will never be normal again. I am not in a long-term institution. I am not even taking pharmaceuticals. I am alive to tell a story which must be told. ECT knocked out my soul, but not my spirit. Psychiatrists sentenced the wrong person to the electric chair. Any person sentenced to ECT is the wrong person. ECT must be discontinued. It is a dangerous procedure performed with a dangerous machine in dangerous hands. It has no place in the practice of medicine. I would now like to call upon our wonderful entertainer, winner of many, many awards, Roger Ellis, to perform.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's an honor to be here. The sales tax. If you've been through Queens Park Station usually between May and December in the morning, you'll see me playing there in the subway. And back in 1967, there was a love-in just up on the other side of the building with Leonard Cohen and Buffy St. Marie. And there were young people coming from all over the place. And there were people putting flowers in my hair, and I was sitting there playing the guitar. And my God, here I am, still playing the guitar. Thank God. This is the Electric Shock song. And I'm going to play it. Someone took my sunshine, stole my memories. Dark days inside my head are killing me. Can't play piano no more, don't know my family. Won't somebody please, please help me? Why is it mostly women silenced by the state? Psychiatric nightmare, electric shock. It's gotta stop. It's gotta stop right now. Someone took my soul, burned my memories, turned my dreams to ashes, hurt me. How could this be happening? By burning a life away. Psychiatric nightmare, electric shock, electric shock. It's gotta stop. It's gotta stop right now.
And that was a Juno Award winner, Roger Ellis, very respected and gutsy folk singer. As I said, he's won Juno Awards and composed and just sang the Electroshock song, the only song of its kind, to my knowledge, in Canada and perhaps in the U.S. as well. Okay, Mark, now we're going to come back to hear some more speeches. Against electroshock, personal testimonies, I may add, that is exclusive. You will not hear this on CBC or mainstream media, friends. So this is exclusive, what you're hearing. Okay, Mark, have we got that?
Dawn, can you come up and read the poem by Laura? Dawn Weitz. The youngster in our group. Let's hear it for the youngster in our group. All right.
It's okay. This is a poem by a sister. Some of you may not know her. She's from Vermont. Laura Ziegler, psychiatric survivor. And this poem, my understanding of it, was written while she was locked up. And it's called Moment on Tower 8. Quote, she's the kind of chronic depressive who could use a good jolt now and then. Bzzz. Hands to temples in her white lab coat laughing. She walks out of the nurse's station, off the locked ward unit, and out of eyeshot. I was turning pages, authorized adversary. Mole burrowing in chartered dirt. I was copying onto a yellow pad your times, your hours tied by whose orders. What they say you said and did, perhaps you did. And perhaps I want her strapped to that stretcher to be bzzz, therapeutically electrocuted. Yes. Just one more jolt. So that, at last, at least, I might finally get the joke. So that's the poem by Laura.
We have greetings from Mel Starkman, and Dawn is going to read the greetings.
Yes. As some of you know, Mel has been a very outspoken, powerful anti-shock activist, anti-psychiatry activist for years, but he can't be here, and he sent this to be read. Unfortunately, this is Mel Starkman. Unfortunately, for reasons beyond my control, I can't be with you today, but I wish you all an empowering rally, and perhaps we'll see you next year. We have begun a movement for the eradication of the cruel torture that is electroshock. Having survived 38 of them myself, It has made a harsh shambles of my life. I just don't want anyone else to go through this procedure at any time. Hence, someone with the love and friendship, somehow with the love and friendship of my family and friends, I arrived. I survived. But I am aware of many that did not. Today is a memorial to all who did not survive, including my own parents. To this day, I don't know how or why I survived. My best wishes to all of you, Mel.
Is out in Saskatchewan, a 20-year-old girl who has a brain tumor, and they are holding her because they want to do electric shock. They're holding her in psychiatry. And it's very sad because the family is split. And some of them want her to have it, and some don't. And actually, her mother was just put in very recently as well in a psych ward. So there is some terrible, terrible stuff, yeah, that is going around. And if anybody wants, Sydney White, who is a great lecturer, actually on Monday night at U of T, 80 St. George, and I have papers here, she will be speaking on mind control and MK Ultra, and she talks about electric shock and all kinds. So if you want more information, it's also good to go hear her talk. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We all, or many of us here, know who've been demonstrating a long time that Allen Memorial Institute and MKUltra is one of the great atrocities of Canadian history. I would now invite Diane to come and read a poem for us. The one and popular, our verse activist.
I'd like to thank everybody for coming here today for this really important movement to stop electroshock. I'm a survivor of childhood sexual abuse and torture. I'm also a survivor. I was buried in the psychiatric system deliberately because I had successfully sued a doctor. This is now under investigation, so that's all I can say. But the best revenge is living well, I would like to say. And this is called Destroying the Evidence. The lost girls sway in slow motion, away from the locked doors into the electric chamber. Here comes the butcher. Big white coat. Big, big, big hands everywhere. And then this surgical silence is blown apart. Nevermore will the broken teeth sing. Even as the gauzy sun was shushed and the grayness began forever, they cut off the song too soon. Through the frozen lace of winter's last frost, snowdrops and crocuses bloom. Children leap from their still spinning bicycles, sprawling them on the lawn like collateral damage, to stop and point up at the chimney smoke from the crematorium. Black clouds fill the skies with the stories of the lost girls. Obituaries. We're not the government. We're criminals. The wind changes direction. The stench of burning witches gag. We are gone, gone, gone. And even the surveillance monitor is weeping.
Day is May Day. B-Day is May Day.
We're going to win this fight. We're going to win it because that's an atrocity. We're going to win it because we are the people. And we are going to win it because, unlike psychiatry, which manufactures lies by the second, we stand in truth. Happy Mother's Day, everybody, and see you next year.
And that was Dr. Bonnie Burbursto, the host and moderator of a very successful anti-shock protest again at Queen's Park in Toronto on May 7th. And I should mention that at the same day, there was a similar anti-shock protest, very feminist-oriented, of course, in Montreal. And I just hope it went well. And my sister's Elaine Grandbois and Ghislaine and others, I hope it went well, and I hope to interview you, and we'll have on a future anti-psychiatry radio show, I hope to interview them. So about what happened in Montreal, because the struggle continues. Now I'd just like to very quickly, in the short time we have left, friends, read out some major, major important facts about electroshock. And it's this is drafted by Dr. Bonnie Burbursto. Electroconvulsive therapy, ECT, hidden violence against women, the sexist facts. Electroconvulsive therapy always damages the brain and causes memory loss, with some people never again being able to manage a job requiring complex thought and never again being able to remember their family and their children. 90% of all shock doctors are men. While it is standard to deny that ECT is brain damaging, early pioneering shock doctors were very clear that ECT was brain damaging. Quote, "These people," wrote psychiatrist and shock promoter Abraham Meyerson, quote, "have more intelligence than they can handle, and the reduction of intelligence is an important factor in the curative process," close quote. That's a direct quote from one of the so-called giants of modern psychiatry in the United States. Throughout its history and in every single country where it is administered, women receive electroshock 2 to 3 times more often than as often as men. ECT is now the treatment of choice for postpartum depression. Women incur more damage in ECT than men do. Women over 60 are singularly targeted for ECT and account for approximately half the so-called treatments. This despite the fact that his extensive longitudinal research by Sackheim in 2007 proves elder women incur the most damage from the procedure. ECT has been appropriately named state-sponsored violence against women. That phrase, very apt, by Dr. Bonnie Burbursto in a major paper, Violence Against Women, that was published in 2006. For more information, friends, on electroshock and the struggle against it in Toronto and elsewhere, if you've got a pen, it's coalitionagainstpsychiatricassault.com. I'll repeat the website long, coalitionagainstpsychiatricassault.com. And we will be back in the second Friday of June, once again, the same time, 6 to 7 p.m. And I want to just leave you. Also, there's a, I want to call your attention to a very good magazine that Psychiatric Survivor controlled called Our Voice, Notre Voix. It's both in English and French. And for more information, you can email OVNV. That's O, V for Victor, V for Victor Letters, at NB, that stands for New Brunswick, NB.AIBN.com. Or you can write to Our Voice, P.O. Box 220, that's 29004, Moncton, M-O-N-C-T-O-N, New Brunswick, postal code EYG4R3. Okay, thank you very much, and keep fighting. We'll be back, and many thanks special to my super technician, super brother here to help, who really, without Mark Brill's help and expertise, we wouldn't have been able to bring you this anti-shock protest on Mother's Day. Thank you very, very much, friends. Stay tuned for Maria Elena Escobar, your show, Ventana Barrios. So stay well.